Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register and I play Laura on The Walking Dead. You're listening to the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Survivors, welcome to episode 76 of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And Kyle is unable to join us this evening. He's got a whole bunch of stuff going on with his work, and he's moving and a whole bunch of other stuff. So he's unable to join up with us tonight. Hopefully he'll make it next week. I don't know, either next week or in 2 weeks. But anyway, we are here to cover the mid-season premiere of Fear the Walking Dead, season 6, episode 8, titled The Door. And somewhat fitting because it's John Dore, I guess. But yes, we'll have lots to say about that. But we actually still have lots to say about the last episode we did as the Walking Dead talk through, season 10, episode 22, titled Here's Negan.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
We have two voicemails from Renee from Atlanta. So let's get started with those.
Hi, guys. This is Renee calling. I know I called in last night, but I listened to the podcast from last week about Negan. So I wanted to call in and say some other things. And I'm going to try to talk slow because OMG, when you guys played me last week, I was talking so fast. You could barely understand me. This Savannah, Georgia, Geechee accent of mine is so awful. So I'm going to slow it down because I really want to get my point across with this one. Okay, to me, Negan could never redeem himself because he was a douchebag from the beginning. You guys were saying that, you know, he went through so much and he this and that, and that's why he became this Negan, and that's why he did this and that. But from the very beginning, Negan messed with his wife, Lucille's best friend. It's certain lines you don't cross, and that's the line that you do not cross. That you do. My best friends, I look at their husbands like a brother. So to me, that was so, that you couldn't get more douchebag than that. You seriously, then he lied and said he had to go see his probation officer knowing his wife was going to get an MRI and for him not to be there just so he can go to the hotel and have sex with her best friend. You know, the best friend. So to me, he was a douchebag from the very beginning, and he did not believe in chivalry because he had a harem of women, because that's why he ended up burning. I can't think of his name right now because I'm so pissed off because me being a woman is not fun to be cheated on. I have, with my first husband, I was cheated on, and it's not a good feeling. And definitely had that been my best friend, it would have been even worse. And it's like Negan, we can't say if he would not have continued to mess with Janine because the apocalypse started. So possibly he could have still continued to mess on her if the apocalypse would not have happened. So he just could never redeem himself to me. And then, like I said, he had a harem of women and he burned, what's his name on the face? Because he was trying to leave because he didn't want him messing with his wife. I mean, come on. Then from the beginning, he beat someone up because they was in a bar and they were talking loud. This is a bar. You don't tell anyone what to do when you're in a bar. Bar, you're supposed to be loud because your wife want to hear a song. No, Negan was always just grimy. And I mean, it's no redemption for me. I don't care about the episode. If anything, the episode made me look at him even worse because, like I said, this was her best friend and he stooped that low. And then my mom was like, well, because he watched his wife, I mean, he wasn't there for his wife. She had cancer. He went through all that. That's why he became the person that he was. That what really wasn't him. We can say the same thing about Maggie when she killed him. She watched her husband die a horrible death when he didn't do anything wrong.
All right, so that was the first voicemail, and before we start talking about it, let's get into the second one.
I really hope you guys play all of this. I'm going to try to finish it up. Like I was saying before, Negan is no redemption. Negan was horrible before the apocalypse, and he's still horrible. I don't care how many people he saved. I don't care what he did for Judith, because, again, he did not believe in chivalry, because he would not have had a harem of women, and he would not have burned, what's his name, Faith, because he didn't want him sleeping with his wife. Like, seriously. And if Negan really was a good person, then Negan would get the heck on, because he knows the pain that he is causing Maggie. And like I was saying, my mom was saying, because of what he went through, I'm going to say the same thing about Maggie when she kills him. Because of what Maggie went through, and she saw her husband die a horrible death, also Abraham, and he was just, I mean, seriously, it's no redemption for Negan. He's grimy. He has always been grimy, and I just don't like it. I listened to quite a few podcasts, and everyone was saying the same thing. Negan went through so much. He watched his wife. Negan left his wife while she had cancer, and she asked him not to leave. And then he stayed gone for 6 weeks. Seriously. I mean, if that had, none of that had anything to do with Negan. Negan was always grimy. And to me, he's the worst character ever of The Walking Dead, just because of what he did. I mean, like I said, it made me even dislike him even more, because you mess with your wife's best friend. That's the line you do not cross. And he's just grimy, and he always has been grimy, and I don't like Negan, and I want them to get him off the show. I want Maggie to have redemption, like she told Michonne. Had that been Rick, could no one could stop you from killing him. Michonne would have took Negan's head off right then and there. Maggie needs to take Negan's head off. Negan needs to go, and he needs to die. He don't need to go off and by himself in the wilderness, in the woods, or whatever. He needs to die. Okay? Love you guys. My favorite podcast ever. And then I wanted to tell you, I think it was Kyle. It's not whatever you said. It's Woo Child. And Brian, yeah, I agree with you. The show is not the same, because I miss my baby Rick. Okay, bye.
Well, thank you so much, Renee, for that set of voicemails.
Yes.
And we will discuss them at length, although we've got a lot to cover tonight. So as far as Negan, can Negan redeem himself? What do you think?
I think we can pretty definitively say that Renee is not a fan.
That's for sure.
It's pretty definitive there.
Yep.
I will stay steadfast to my thoughts that I don't think we can get to a point where there is a redemption. I think the thing that was brought up, and I think it was Yvette Nicole Brown said, we can get to a neutral place.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think we can get to where, you know, Negan and Maggie are hanging out. But I think that there's a, you know, sort of a stalemate that we can get to, this potential. And I guess that goes back to, you know, can anyone come back from that? You'd make the same argument of, well, if you've, you know, done your time, if you have, you know, paid your price in society's eyes, can you start over? So he's done a lot of bad stuff. He's been, you know, been a bad guy. He waffle-ironed Dwight's face. You know, he had some girls on the side.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing of, you know, redemption and forgiveness. I don't think it's going to be a matter of forgive. I think there's going to be a point to where, wasn't it Negan that always said that survivors are a commodity?
Yeah.
And I think they're to the point where, you know, they don't have a lot of live, viable bodies in Alexandria. So,
yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, I would have a similar take on that. Like, can Negan be forgiven for the things that he did? No, but I think Negan can, like Yvette Nicole would said, like a neutral point, that's a good way to put it, is that he can do enough good that he could make up for a lot of the bad that he did. And, you know, mind you, he's got to make up for a lot of bad, but it would be possible to tip the scales to a point, at least. You know, that he would have to do a lot of good over, you know, the rest of his life to make up for the bad that he had done. But you know, it's like you say, like, you know, going to prison and all that stuff. It's like, at some point,
at what point does somebody pay their debt to society? And
right.
You say, well, I may not invite him home for dinner, but, you know,
right.
I'm not going to run him out of town.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So,
and despite how much you hate him, wouldn't you say that that is a function of how well his character is written and acted?
Yeah, I think that is a way to put it, is that, you know, he's a character that we love to hate, you know, mm-hmm. and like, he's not a character that we go, I don't really care about Negan. You either love him or you hate him, or you love to hate him, or you love certain things that he does, or you hate certain things that he does, but he's not a character that you look at with indifference.
Correct.
He gets a reaction out of people. Sometimes it's a really bad reaction, like with you, Renee. Sometimes it's a really good reaction. And I know people that absolutely love Negan. I wouldn't count myself as one of those people, but I do know some people that just absolutely love Negan.
Well, and you can crawl up on your soapbox about, you know, the state of how protagonists are written in the aughts, that we seem to have gone to the extreme of the anti-hero.
Yeah.
That it's not any, that even the good guys you see now are not the old school squeaky white hat kind of guys.
Yeah.
Is that even if you look at somebody who you would argue is in that same vein, you know, you look at somebody like James Bond. Well, he's a hero, but he's also kind of a womanizer and a gambler, and he drinks too much.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing, is that nowadays you don't have, even your heroes have vices. Even your heroes have problems. I mean, as much as we love Rick, there were some times where, you know, Rick had some moments of indecision.
He did.
And Rick had some moments where he was blinded to what he should have seen.
Yeah.
And a good bit of that, again, goes back to how the quality of the writing and the ability for Andrew Lincoln to pull that stuff off. So,
yep.
And, you know, I love the fact that she feels that way, because I know that we're not going to get a, you know, great job, guys. Love what you said there. Even though she may love what we said, she may not agree with us. And that's fine.
Right.
You can.
And, you know, like, I will agree with you on, I agree with you with a lot of what you said, though. Negan sleeping with the BFF instead of taking her to the MRI, that is just not cool. You know, it's like, did he have to sleep with her so badly that he couldn't take her to the MRI? That is pretty bad. And, you know, and the whole, like, chivalry harem thing, I think Negan has his own definition of things, and chivalry is one of them. Like, the way, you know, he had his harem, he looked at it as, you know, these women are choosing to do this, you know, but he doesn't look at it like he's coercing them to do it. Like, he's basically saying, well, you know, you can say no, but it's kind of like, well, you say no and you'll get table scraps versus you say yes and, you know, you'll be treated like a queen or a princess, right. But it, you know, so it's not much of a choice, but still, it's a choice in his mind. I'm not going to argue about the fact that it's coercion, because I think it is, but in his mind, in the world, according to Negan, he's chivalrous. And
well, and you know, I'll take a page out of my old dusty sociology notes from college. And, you know, there were arguments made that human beings are not monogamous by nature.
Yeah.
Is that, while you might say that men and women have different goals, that, you know, it's been argued that on an animal level, you know, men are wired to propagate themselves widely amongst the viable females in a population. And, you know, it's just, you can argue that females are sort of wired to, you know, settle in the housekeeping and make kids. And this is not my opinion, so don't crucify me. I'm, you know, happily monogamously married. So I'm just saying that in certain situations that may be something that happens. I mean, I don't know. I kind of agree with you that it's not, you know, conventional chivalry. I mean, he wants to, you know, defend women, but yet he's got his little, I don't know, can I get away with saying, but, that's just one of those things.
Yeah. I don't know if I could say
that. Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to ask. I think I know what you said, but I don't want to ask about it. Anyway, as far as fights, one thing you brought up about, you know, you don't fight in bars. Well, I hate to disagree with you, but a lot of fights happen in bars. That's why you have bouncers.
And I'll say, just professionally speaking, that whenever you get a lot of people and a lot of alcohol in a small space, yeah, fights happen in bars.
Yeah. Dwight's face, I think basically he burned Dwight's face because they escaped, and it was part of the penance, basically, where, you know, he got in with, you know, he basically pleaded for them to be brought in, and, you know, it was kind of like, well, there's one final thing you can do, and it was the iron, right? And he took it. So, I mean, was that a great thing that he did? Of course it wasn't a great thing that he did, but I'm it wasn't because he wanted to have sex with his wife. It was because he escaped, I think, and took away, if you remember, Sherry had a sister, and the sister was going to marry Negan, and
right.
The sister left with them, and so it was all part of that. But Negan is always grimy, so I will agree with you on that last point. He is kind of a swarthy guy.
He has that air of slightly sleazy.
Yes. Yeah. Even pre-apocalypse, he did.
Well, it's the fact that, too, the more that I've thought about it, he must have a stock of hair product, because he's always had the same kind of slicked back, pompadour-y kind of hair, too.
Yeah. 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 Okay, so I think that's it for Renee, and we got to move on because we got a lot to cover. We got another We have another voicemail here from Megan from Williamsburg, PA. So let's play that now.
Hi, this is Megan Lehman, and I have one piece of feedback for last week's Walking Dead episode, Here's Negan. This is something that I don't think I've heard discussed on either podcast I listen to or in any of the chat threads that I'm part of or in any of the articles I read about the episode or on Talking Dead. So I might have imagined this, or maybe people didn't want to mention it because it was too disturbing, but I'm just curious if others got the same interpretation that I did. When Negan decided that he was going to throw the doctor and Laura under the bus, basically, and rat them out to the biker gang, and then he left to go take the medicine to Lucille, as he was walking out, he walked past that RV, and you heard Laura on the RV as one of the biker gang guys came on board. And first she said something like, no, don't touch that. And then she started yelling, no, no, in a panicked way and screaming. And I, you know, trigger warning here, but I took that to mean that he was going to rape her. Maybe I'm too macabre, but I mean, that's a theme we've seen over and over again. On The Walking Dead, at least hinted at multiple times, because, you know, let's face it, bad dudes like that are going to take advantage if they, you know, feel like it, unfortunately, and have an opportunity. We've seen that with a few of the different groups. So I was wondering if anybody else got that impression. And that would be really important to my interpretation of the events of that episode and how it developed Negan's character, because he heard that if he knew what was happening and he chose not to go save her and help her to prevent her from being raped because he was going to try to take care of his dying wife and then she died anyway, that could have been part of the despair that he felt at having, you know, made the wrong decision and, quote, not been, you know, tough enough or a man enough or whatever, and walked out and let that happen to Laura, who then became obviously one of his top people. And she probably never knew that he could have stopped it and didn't, the way it played out. Or she may have never even known that he's the one that ratted them out to the biker gang. Who knows what story he told. But it's really disturbing to think that, because we know, even though Negan had the harem, which really was a non-consensual situation for at least some of those women, I can't think of her name, Dwight's wife, Sherry, you know, he supposedly hates rape and doesn't believe in rape. So that, I think, would just add to the psychology for Negan of like, okay, I made the series of decisions and these were the ramifications and I have to live with that. And how is that going to harden me and change me and the choices I make moving forward? So that was just one little follow-up piece from last week's episode that I'm curious if others got that same interpretation.
Well, thank you so much, Megan, for that voicemail, and we'll be hearing back from you later in the episode. So,
and yes, thank you for that. And I'd say you're probably on to something. I don't think we talked about it directly. I think we may have inferred at it when he left, but yeah, you've got a point there, and that could be why he is like he is about forcible interaction, shall we say.
Yeah. Okay. I don't really have a comeback except to say thank you for that. We talked a little bit about the whole consensual versus non-consensual stuff already, so. As far as Laura getting raped in the RV, I hadn't thought of that before, so good observation. Okay, so let's move on to this week's episode, season 6, episode 8 of Fear the Walking Dead, titled The Door, written by showrunners Ian Goldberg and Andrew Chambliss, and directed by co-executive producer Michael E. Satrasimus, who has also directed several episodes of The Walking Dead. Most notable would probably be The Grove. The description from AMC.com is as follows. A reunion with an old friend helps pull John Dory out of his darkest moment yet. Back at Lawton, Virginia demands answers. I don't really, really didn't see Lawton in this, but anyway. So, LT, what did you give this episode?
Well, I gave it a 9 out of 10, not today. But it was, John. It was today.
Yeah. I initially was going to rate this one higher than I did, but on, I'd say, second and third watch, I rated it a little bit lower because I started seeing a little bit of the kinks in it. And just, of course, overall, killing my favorite character on the show, but we'll have a lot more to talk about with that. 9 out of 10, it's not too late to quit this show. Just kidding. I'm not going to quit this show, but obviously Garrett Dillahunt is quitting this show. Anyway, but we'll talk about that because there's some things that we could think about as to why this happened.
And as far as it goes, I don't know what broke my heart more, seeing the episode or watching him talk about it on Talking Dead.
Yeah. Cause I mean, there were certain things that he said that made me think that he wanted to leave. So, and who can blame him? You know, I guess I'll get right into it now. When you've got, you know, thousands or even hundreds of thousands of fans that interact with you at conventions and, you know, on Twitter and, you know, Instagram, whatever, and they're saying, love your character, hate the show, it's going to kind of wear on you after a while. And I think Garrett certainly saw the potential of his character and saw, you know, the crap that was season 4B and especially season 5. And he, you know, said, I think what happened, I think they were thinking about killing off a character. And as soon as he heard that, he probably went into their office and said, I volunteer.
So, and the other side is, I think it might have been one of those contractual agent things because he was talking about it. I saw the trailer for Army of the Dead with him and Dave Bautista.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's going to be another big action movie.
That's right. That's a Netflix movie, isn't it? Yeah.
But like I said, he's headlining with, Bautista. So maybe, you know, he said he's got other movie projects.
Yeah.
It could. So we don't know.
Yeah. That could have had something to do with it as well. So, you know. All right. So we've got some listener ratings. LT, why don't you take the first?
All right. Glenn from Toronto says 9 out of 10. That is some ugly mustard. And you beat me to it, Glennis, because I was getting ready to say I was going to use a Costco-sized jar of ugly mustard. Yep.
Okay. All right. Renee from Atlanta is next. She says, 8 out of 10, it's just the way life is now. People die. Mad face, crying face, and crying face.
Okay. And Dieta from Detroit says, I rate this episode 7 out of 10. They just won't let fear be great. They decide to kill John Dory off. Anger face.
All right. So let's move on to our awesome sauce. Awesome sauce.
Okay. Let's start off with some listener awesome sauce. Dieta from Detroit said, John finding Morgan and reuniting old friends. I was so excited, like, yeah, we're about to get the crew back together. But then they killed John off. Angry face.
Yep.
And we agree.
Yeah, we agree. Glynis from Toronto is next. She has two. She says, trying hard to find the awesome with that horrible ending. The truck decked out with the rejected suicidal doors of John's and running the gauntlet and smashing its way through the Walker obstacle course like an episode of Robot Wars. Well, Morgan and John picked off the stray walkers. The one very good thing Dakota did before her very, very bad thing. And then she says, the phrase, that is some ugly mustard, was uttered by John Dory in Fear the Walking Dead Season 4, Episode 1, and then by Morgan in Fear the Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 8. And I believe John said it in subsequent episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. He didn't just say it the one time. He said it a few times.
That was like one of his pet phrases.
Yeah. I don't remember specifically which times he said it, but I know he said it more than that.
Okay. Renee from Atlanta says, now this is what I'm talking about. And it looks like hug or happy emojis. The fact that the franchise is still willing to kill all favorite characters. That's what I love about this show. They're not afraid to go there. The same with Game of Thrones. But dang, rest easy, John Dory.
Yeah, I have to say that is one thing that I have to, give them credit for, is that, and it had been a long time since they had killed off a character. I heard this and mentioned on one podcast today. The last major character they killed off on Fear was Madison. We still never saw a body with her. So, there's always speculation that she could come back, but
to fuel all the theories of all those Madison fanatics out there.
Well, I mean, look at how many times, say Daniel has come back when, we thought Daniel was dead and like,
true.
No, Daniel's not dead. And then, oh, we think Daniel's dead. No, he's not dead. it keeps popping up. But that one, I will say that, it did take some guts for them to kill off this character. And that's why I have to think that it came from Garrett. It was a mutual decision that they were making. They realized they needed to kill off someone. And Garrett wanted it, he basically wanted right. off. So, because otherwise, I don't see them making that decision. Because, he is a character that was pretty much universally loved. Such an interesting character and a good person, a character that you rooted for. To see him gone from this show, this is the equivalent of losing Carl in a lot of ways,
right.
or Glenn, right. or Abraham, or of course Rick. It's that level of loss, because he is a character. I think that a lot of people were watching the show because of this character. Ones that had started, on the show. Especially in later seasons, were into this show because of that character. And with him being gone, it's a blow to the show. Hopefully they will rally around it and take the show in a different direction. I think it has potential for June's character, because she could end up, going on a rampage.
Well, and it's fans like me.
Yeah.
John was one of the characters that I really, really liked because, kind of glad Kyle's not here, because I was going to say, yeah, I can forgive Charlie. Because I never connected with Nick. When Nick got killed, I was like, Nick got killed.
Yeah.
But daggum it, they killed John Dory. So,
yeah.
And I think to the bigger point, they have the, it's a valid thing to say that if all of your characters are always at risk, it makes it more tense, because we talked about it. We talked about it in the middle of the extra episodes with Carol and Daryl. We know they have plot armor. So there's suspense, but there's no real suspense. And whatever anybody wants to say about George R.R. Martin, whether, you know, when you read the books, if it was a chapter, if it was a book, nobody was safe. And I think getting back to that on Walking Dead, because we knew, you know, people, you know, they killed people off for a long time. And fear hasn't done that in a long time. So I'm not saying, if you're listening out there, Mr. Writer Man, I'm not saying kill off my favorite characters, but it's good to know that, you know, there's some risk. It's the apocalypse. You know, let's add that level of uncertainty back into the mix, because I mean, we haven't had that in a long time. We kind of knew they were going to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, both shows have gone through their periods where they didn't kill anybody off, you know, particularly, the main show, you know, went like, I want to say pretty much most of season eight. I think most of season eight, they didn't really kill anybody off. And, there was a long stretch. Well, they killed off Carl, right? And then later they killed off, like, you know, bad guys like Simon and that, but, you know, they didn't kill, there were very few, characters that I can think of, you know, on the good side that were killed off.
It wasn't in the 1 or 2 degrees of Rick Grimes. It was
right.
3 degrees and 4 degrees.
It was, yeah.
You right. know, the guy from Alexandria you yeah. saw have two lines in an episode.
Aaron's boyfriend, ago. You know, they killed him in season eight. And of course, killing Carl, that was a huge death, but you know, there were no, like, you had to go back to Sasha to have a big death. And then after that, I don't think there were any big deaths at all until like the pseudo death of Rick, you know, not that I can think of, I could be forgetting someone. And then of course, like in season nine, like after that, there was nobody until, Jesus. And then again, I think no one until, the Pikes, but you know, anyway, so it goes in, but for this show, like season five, from what I can remember, they didn't kill anybody at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been quite a long time. The only one I can think of they killed was Matt Frewer, but he wasn't a regular.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our own awesome sauce. So LT, what do you have?
Okay. Well, my awesome sauce is, well, it's sort of ironic sauce.
Okay.
But it is awesome. I mean, it's a bitter pill to say that I was glad to have Fear back after the episodes that we endured in the extra part of the main show, because arguably the best one was the second one and the last one.
Yeah.
And, you know, to come out swinging like they did, to get the quality of episode that we got for Fear, which is usually the, you know, the second fiddle, they came out swinging hard and it was a really good episode, but it had to be, you know, the twist was it had to be John get killed at the end.
Yeah.
But I will say this, at least his last episode was a really, really good one.
That it was.
That it's not just a weak, sad, you know, not good episode, and they killed him. because at least this way it was worth watching. One of the awesome things I thought was the way they rigged the doors on that truck. There are several, I know one of them I mentioned in the notes, the British had a APC they called the Flying Pig, and it was basically an armored truck that had two swinging gates on the front that were like chain link fence. So they could deploy these big wide doors and use them to push, you know, crowds of riding people out of the street. So it was really smart of them to use the doors like they did on the truck, almost like a cow catcher.
Oh, yeah.
So that it was theoretically presenting a wide front so that you couldn't get people under the wheels.
Right.
And you would just push them out of the way. One could argue that it was Morgan whacking the guy on the side and he fell under the tire, but.
Well, it reminded me, being from Canada like I am, and it's been a few years since I've seen this, but you know, snow plows, they always have the blade at an angle,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that the snow doesn't end up right below, you know, the truck. It ends up, you know, blowing, you know, getting shoveled to the side.
Right.
So it's similar kind of thing, I think. So,
and I enjoyed the scene of John shooting walkers. I thought that, even though I'll talk about it more in a different sauce section, watching him, you know, shoot the walkers as they came out of the river from his seat in the cabin. The scene in front of Bill's was just absolutely cool. Just doing the classic gunslinger from the hip, you know, taking out the walkers that were trying to get in the front of the store. And then, of course, the shot he made on the ranger dragging Morgan on the rope.
Yeah.
It was good that we got that last bit of John the Marksman.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let it go because I will agree with you in a few minutes.
Okay. Well, actually not even a few minutes, a few seconds.
Yep.
There were some great scenes between Garrett and Lenny James that, every time they started talking about, like, you know, where Morgan was trying to convince John to come with him, and you know, just the despair in John Dory and all of that. I liked how Morgan was trying to plead with him, and I also could feel, and I've got more to say about this later, John's despair and how, anyway, all those scenes, all those lines, it really connected with me. Just fantastic acting in this episode. And I also want to give kudos to Zoe Coletti, because I thought her performance in this episode was great as well. Like, specifically what I want to highlight is that turn she made, when she pointed the gun at John, and then after, when she was talking about it with Morgan, like, she went from, you know, this innocent girl to being a psychopath. And like, you know, it was just like one little turn of the screw, and it was just, you know, she really sold that to me. And like, one question that I'll pull for my notes right now is, in that family, who's the monster? Is it Virginia? Is it Ginny? Or is it Dakota? And I'm starting to wonder if it's, you know, like, Ginny might be cold and calculating and, you know, have some tendencies, but I think the real true psychopath might be Dakota here.
It's possible.
You know,
I was going to say, you could tell that Garrett Dillahunt and Lee James are good friends.
Yeah.
That, again, taking a note from last week, the chemistry between them two,
yeah,
when they had those conversations,
yeah,
you know, when Morgan and Dakota first showed up and John met them, to all the times and all the different ways that Morgan was trying to convince John to come with them, even down to the inevitable betrayal before the bridge. It was just so good. And I will also concur with you about Zoe Colletti, how she went from, you know, weepy innocent girl to Charles Manson to, you know, hysterical girl.
Yeah.
Just major points for her. You know, yeah. That was well done on her part.
I agree. The walker that got caught in the wheel well, I thought was pretty cool. How that went down. I thought that was a nice effect.
That was gnarly.
Speaking of the scenes between Morgan and John, I particularly liked the one where when Morgan kind of, you know, grabbed the walkie and told Virginia to meet them at the cabin, because I think this is an example, and, you know, Morgan brought this example to John. You know, John didn't really have the right to, you know, kind of force Morgan to, you know, go with him or whatever, but he did. But like, Morgan gave John some medicine that might have been bitter, but it would save his life. You know what I mean? So, right. You know, I wrote in the notes, sometimes a friend needs to give another friend what they need and not what they want. And, you know, so like, you might get pissed off at him, or he might get pissed off at him for doing that, but in the long run, it's in his, you know, better,
it was in his own good. Yeah, it was in his best interest.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, it at time, you know, if what happened hadn't happened, you know, with Dakota, it would have saved his life, you know. So, and it did save his life, I think, up until that point. The water scene, I thought, was beautifully shot. You know, we see, you know, start from looking up, and then we see, you know, him going down. We see the picture and him picking up the picture and then going back up, and then, you know, getting back on the door. All of that, I think, was beautifully done. And kudos to Satrazimus and the, you know, cinematographer, whatever, director of photography, I think is what they call it.
The stunt team.
Yes. And I also thought that it was a good plot twist that it was Dakota that saved Morgan, because it not only made sense, because if you think about it, like, who would have been, if it had been some outsider that had done it, you know, like, well, who would have been, like, would have been, you know, from this crazy group that, you know, was drawing on the submarine, the ones that right. Morgan killed, you know, a few episodes back? Or would it be, you know, someone who knew where they were? Well, the fact that it was Dakota, it makes perfect sense. I never thought about it being her even once. So it was a really nice twist. It was a shocker for me, but I thought that it was a good one. So kudos to the writers for that. I can't give them kudos for everything, but kudos for that. You know, and I also want to give kudos to, or, you know, I like that June, her reaction, like, and Jenna Elfman also acting the pants off for her. so to speak.
Yeah.
Sorry, that might have sounded bad. But anyway, June, her reaction, you know, like frantic, knocking the curtains off the window and you know, swatting the whatever Virginia had in her hands and,
yep.
you know, handing the walkie to her. Well, not really handing up, like throwing it at her, basically. I thought all of that was really good. And I think it's an indication that June won't take Ginny's shit. So
oh, yeah.
I think that's good for the future. Well, you know, if you think about it, you know, she owns June her life. And because if,
correct.
If June hadn't, cut off her arm, then Ginny would have died. So
she would have become what she hates.
Right.
And just to finish up on the thought before we get too far from it, I think that, yes, it was a delicious plot twist that it was Dakota that saved Morgan, because that adds the whole, she did it in, you know, defiance of her sister. Plus, it also conveniently, and I got to go there, it conveniently squashes the rumor of, oh, it was Madison who came
oh,
out
yeah.
of the blue and saved Morgan. Nope.
Nope.
And it's just so good, because now it's like, oh, your sister hates this man more than anything, and you're the reason he's still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's it for Awesome Sauce for this week. And now it's time for the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
Okay. So we only got one. I'll give it, since you have weak sauce.
Okay.
Glynis from Toronto. She just has one that says, it's time to have a 100% fit Morgan. Too many times now, he is incapacitated conveniently for the purpose of the situation and plot. Come on, writers. Don't always fall back on having Morgan injured. Fire up those brain cells a bit more.
Well, that's true. He's been playing hurt a lot.
Yeah, he has all season. Which,
because he's been stabbed, he's been shot, he's been...
Yeah.
You know, come on, give Morgan a break.
Yep. All right, LT, what do you have for weak sauce?
Well, for starters, since we were back at Bill's again, Bill's must be on the east elbow of nowhere. It must yeah. be way off the beaten path. Because when we got the scene where Morgan is in the little back room, they still had a stack of cardboard boxed canned goods.
Mm.
And I always refer to them as, you know, the little half rack that the cans come in. There were at least two stacked up behind him. And it looked like, if I was not absolutely mistaken, it looked like pork and beans. So, like I said, Bill's must be somewhere where there haven't been anybody looking to raid stores. Because how many stores have we seen that haven't had anything on the shelves? I mean, they still have knickknacks and videos and postcards.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. My next bit of weak sauce is, I guess it was Marcus was the now dead ranger that got buried.
That yes, drug. Okay. He was.
Marcus must be deaf as a post, because when he was inside the store and he was talking on the walkie and he walked outside, they didn't wait very long before they start talking in their normal inside voices.
Yeah.
And I don't think the walkie was that loud that he wouldn't have heard them. Just seemed like to me that they could have waited a little bit longer, because I don't think he just, when he said he was going for higher ground, I don't know if he immediately sprung onto his horse and rode away.
Yeah.
And even if he did, you know, horses don't idle. They don't make that much noise. So that was just kind of, I was going, whoa, wait a minute. Now, about the scene with Dakota and John on the bridge. It's not his way. It wouldn't have furthered the plot. We know that he had to go, but I just keep thinking that if it had been somebody else in John's shoes, it would have been, hey, Dakota, look at the flowers.
Yeah.
Once he figured out that she was the one that, I can't remember his name now. Once he figured out that she was the one that shanked the ranger back in Lawton, you know, once he was able to put the pieces together that it was her knife that killed the guy, I'm just thinking if it had been Carol would have probably put a bullet in her coconut right there without much more dialogue.
Yeah, if this was Carol and not Morgan that made the trip cross country. I agree
just
with
saying,
you.
Just saying that John, you know, after he didn't shoot Marcus in the store, I just think that John was the sort that he's not going to shoot you. Now, granted, I still think it would have been hard, but I think if he'd have slapped leather, he could have, you know, he could have done it, but I don't think I think even though he knew she killed him, I don't think John was the one who would shoot a little girl.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he would have just rather, he would have instead killed, what am I trying to say?
I think it was just like it came out. I think that he would have probably wanted to do something, you know, tell Morgan, whatever.
But yeah.
I don't think that John would have been the one to go ahead and just shoot the girl.
He would have.
I think even though he caught her, he's still not going to be the one to just,
right,
you know, do the look at the flowers drill.
Well, and you know, it's like Lizzie was batshit crazy.
She was irredeemable.
Right. But she clearly had mental health issues, mm-hmm. you know, whereas Dakota, like, I don't know. I called her a psychopath. I don't know if that's true. I'd have to look at the definition between psychopath and sociopath. But, like, to me, she's more redeemable than Lizzie would be.
Well, right? And I think your point is that Dakota did something that was deliberately, you know, she did something right. That was she in an otherwise clear and normal mind justified doing what she did.
Right.
And, you know, Lizzie was just off her nut. She was,
right.
she was unhinged and not anchored in reality.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. She was,
she was crazy.
She was insane. Whereas Dakota is just, she has issues, but I don't think being insane is one of them.
Right.
You know,
we could say that she's evil.
Yes.
But, oh man, we know that characters who otherwise do bad things can be redeemed.
Yeah. In modern times, like I guess the way you could put it between these two characters, if they had committed the same crime, you know, or type of crime, I guess you could say, Lizzie would be the kind of criminal that would be put away in a mental institution for the rest of her life because she clearly could not judge right from wrong. Whereas Dakota would be put in a prison for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, I think, the difference between the two.
Yeah, I think you're on the money.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my take on it. Okay. So as far as my weak sauce, the main thing that I want to get into is that it's a retread. I think this has big similarities between what we saw Charlie do to Nick. And also, I think, in some ways, how Madison died. But especially if I want to say anything, it was Charlie killing Nick, you know, this young girl killing, you know, this main character, and how it kind of was out of the blue, unexpected. In the case of the difference there is that Charlie, I think, there was no, I don't think she was planning to do what she did. Whereas Dakota, I think there was some motive there and some, like, you know,
there's okay. Not to steal your thunder, but I think,
no, please steal my thunder.
The thing with Charlie is she was a member of a competing group,
right?
And she killed Nick out of a defensive action from them doing their normal apocalypse looting and pillaging.
Right.
But Dakota is a little more nuanced because she was, when she killed John, it was a little more premeditated, but it was in this whole thing with her trying to get away from her sister or hurt her sister. And there was not a large degree of interaction between Charlie and her buddy with the group before they ran up on Nick and she popped cap in him. But Dakota, this is a little more nuanced. This is a little more premeditative. This is a little more involved because we've been dealing with Virginia for how many episodes now? Almost a season, perhaps.
I think she showed up around season or like episode 13 or 14 of last season.
So yeah, it's sort of a big difference.
Yeah.
Because Charlie was just, you know, she was reacting to something that happened in the moment from somebody who randomly ran up on him out of the blue. You might make the argument that she was doing her stuff with the vultures, but I don't see that her in vulturedom is quite the same as Dakota and Jenny. She was more just like a tag on member of the crew. You know, she wasn't, whatever his name was, Mr. King Vulture. It's not like it was his sister or something.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that. Like Dakota was basically acting on her own versus Charlie was, like you say, acting as a member of the group, you know. It's good points there. But it's just similar, and it made me think of that for sure. Was that the only way to clear the bridge? I mean, is that the best that they could do in that case? Like, you know, the store is not very far away, and we know that they've got, like, videotapes in there, and I assume that they have one of those videotapes that can, you know, that they can play stuff on, you know, they must have a video player that plays their message or something. Wouldn't they be able to play something and draw the walkers out that way with sound?
Brian, I got one better than that.
All right.
Since this is Texas, the land of magic batteries, they've got the Jeep. They could go to that Jeep and take the horn off, wire the horn to there a battery. Scrabble up the bank on the other side, run down the road. And that was the question. When John sailed his canoe under the bridge, I'm assuming that the bank on Bill's side has a way to get down to the water. I don't remember looking at the other side of the river to see if there was a way you could go up the bank on that side. Yeah. So one could make the argument that the other side was a more sharp drop off and would have been less easy to scale. However, with that said, since it's close to a bridge, generally speaking, there's a way to get down to the water on either side of a bridge like that, because I guarantee you before the apocalypse, somebody was fishing and they would be fishing on the bank under the bridge.
Yeah.
So you've got a canoe, you've got a battery, you've got a horn. We know they've got wire and pliers. You know, you just wire something up, run down the road 100 yards or so, you know, make with the woo-woo noises. Attach the horn to the battery, put it down, run away, wait for the walkers to start moving away. Then you jump in the truck and take off.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there was plenty of things they could have done if, and I have to caveat it, if they could have gotten to the other bank and gone on the other side of the road and gone down far enough to at least get them from being bunched up there at the gate. And I'm going to complain about that in what sauce.
Yeah.
So
I got a bunch of what sauces, but, yep. But, yeah, I mean, they wouldn't have to get all of them like off the bridge, you know, like the normal way. They could have like poked the hole in like they ended up doing, mm-hmm. and just have a bunch of them fall off the side, you know, and they wouldn't have to get rid of all of them, just enough to get through, you know, a lot easier. So that I just had issue with yep. how they did it.
Well, I'm going to, like I said, I have a pontification point on that later. So,
okay. The last point, and this is the big point that I didn't understand. So they get past the walkers on the bridge. Why did they stop there? Like, okay.
Because.
So, yes, exactly. So, you know, Dakota, you know, directed the truck. It hit the side, opened up the fence, and, you know, later gave her a place to shoot John Dory and push him off and onto the water. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we understand because of plot, but still, there was no reason at all why they would have stopped there. What they should have done, what would have made a lot more sense, is they keep going.
Well, that's true. But,
And you know, John would want to go away.
Well, it's because that looked like to be a mid-70s Chevrolet truck, and we all know that General Motors in the mid-70s put the word has left my brain.
By the way, one thing I noticed about that, it's a Chevy pickup. Yep. On the dashboard, it had a GM logo that mm-hmm. was upside down.
Well, just to belabor that point, all those trucks, whether it's a Chevrolet or a GMC, are all identical.
Yeah.
And so I know a couple of guys that had GMC parts on the interior that they got out of a junker on their Chevy trucks.
Yep. Yep.
And I was going to say, when I was trying to be a smart aleck before, mid-70s Chevrolet trucks have their have the module that shuts off the ignition when you need exposition. So because they had speechifying to do, the truck wouldn't start.
Ah.
But you're exactly right that, okay, so we've gone through the thing where the point was to get across the bridge, so let's stop and talk.
Exactly.
It's like, yes, there's we have needed bits of exposition that must be delivered before we can continue the journey.
Yes, so we have to shoot you, John, on this bridge. So we're going to stop right here, and we're going to, you know, now you're going to confront Dakota. I keep on wanting to call her Ginny, or like little Ginny or something.
Mini Ginny.
You know, we have to stop here so that, you know, we can deliver your final blow here. Yeah.
Well, it's like I said, it's that, you know, the gods of exposition have spoken. They must be honored, you know, post zombie kill. We must we must sacrifice to the gods of exposition and talk. But yeah, that I'll throw this in. It's the same thing when I was talking about Daryl and the army guys. Take the stuff, take all the stuff, sort it out later.
Yes.
It's the same thing. You've killed the walkers. The truck still runs. The sun is shining. Let's get down the road.
Yep.
We can talk. We can talk on the way.
Exactly. All right. So that's it for our weak sauce. We've got what sauces to come. So let's get to those.
What?
All right. So first is from Aaron. And I put one of Aaron's comments. They weren't really listed as sauces, but I put this one in the what sauce. So
made an executive decision.
Yes.
So Aaron says the drowning scene was visually pretty, I have to give them, but unrealistic, of course, as the photo would have floated out of reach and he would have probably drowned going down that far to the bottom. And given he's shot, it's hard to hold your breath, so yeah, getting back up wasn't going to be as easy as he did it.
I would agree with that.
Can't argue.
Yeah. Renee from Atlanta, she has two. She says, Dakota killed John Dory. Wow, what a psychopath. Would that be rolling eye face? I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan calling John his best friend. Really? What about Rick? Okay, he can have two best friends. I have three besties. All right. Mm-hmm. All right, LT, what do you have for your what sauce?
Well, I have to agree with Aaron. You know, was that picture printed on lead paper? I think it was a great effect. Love the shot, but sorry, there's no way you could tell me that thing would have been on the bottom under the bridge. It would be halfway down to his cabin if it had been thrown off.
Yeah.
And while I was talking about deaf people before, is Morgan deaf? Where was he when this long, drawn-out standoff between Dakota and John were going on? And then it just seems like it took him a little bit before he showed up after she had time to shoot him. He had time to talk, and she had time to push him over the railing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or is that the other magic attribute of Fear the Walking Dead Texas, that sound doesn't travel?
Sound doesn't travel.
Batteries last forever.
Yeah. Morgan was 200 miles down the road.
Yeah.
When John was shot.
You'd think he was just there a second ago. So,
expanding and contracting time and distance.
You know, if it had been me and I hear we just got done and it's blammo, I would have at least turned around and looked.
Yeah.
I mean, John stood there for what? 30 seconds before she gave him the old heave ho. So
yeah.
Where were you, Morgan? Where were you?
That's a good point.
We already talked about it. I've still got to complain about, okay, batteries. They took a battery out of a rusty-ass junker truck and put it in, and vudden, it automatically cranks up.
Yeah, I mean, wondered that too.
Just for editorial content, I had a battery. One of my vehicles had some battery issues, and so I had ended up buying a second battery that was in the back of the Jeep, and I went to put it in the vehicle after the battery in the vehicle was no longer working. And after just riding around a couple of months in the back of the Jeep, it was deader than a sack of hammers. So obviously I don't live in Texas. Radio ranges. Let's just beat that dead horse a little bit. So Dead Ranger had to go for higher ground to get transmission, but Morgan was able to talk to Jenny just like she was within eyeball range. And about that, it just seems like we're playing again with the magic time and distance and radio wave thing again, because they work when they need to work and they don't work when they need to not work. about the bridge again, when you were talking about the barricade, my question was, why didn't Morgan just do the good old school Walking Dead fence drill? You know, he's got his axe with the pokey end. You just go to whoever's next to the fence and you go poke, 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 poke. Just like they did, I think it was at the prison when they would suck them to the fence and then poke them through the wire. Those barricades, you know, I don't see that they weren't head pokeable through. So, you know, you get the first five or six that are next to the gate. You wait for them to fall. You wait for the next five or six to step over them. You go poke, 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 poke. And then it would just be a matter of, you know, seeing how many walkers you could kill before they were rode up high enough that the walkers couldn't get over the bodies of their re-slain comrades to get to the gate. Just a thought.
Yeah.
And I had another question. Okay. So John's cabin. So are we to assume that because Marcus found where John's cabin was, that now Jenny knows where John's cabin is? Because before, John's cabin was kind of like Bill's. It was out of the way and nobody knew where it was. So I'm just kind of puzzling over the fact that, okay, so now they keyed up walkie-talkie. I mean, do they have radio triangulation gear where they can figure out where he's at?
No, I tend to think we saw that scene where Marcus left the store. And I'm thinking that when he left the store, he gave more like description of where he was. So it was with that detail. And plus Morgan kind of gave more detail about where the store was. So
yeah, but the store is still not that close to the cabin.
And well, it's a couple miles away, but then again, you know, how far away is Lawton from this cabin?
Oh, that's true.
You know, like it seemed like they got there in a half hour.
We'll just chalk it up to the fact that, you know, we're obviously in Rhode Island size Texas as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's the,
you know, well, I just thought it was just sort of convenient that once she figures out that she needs to know where John's cabin is, she suddenly does.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's all I got for mine.
Okay. So knowing that June's alive and she's still out there, I have to ask, why would John want to kill himself? Like, you would think, even though she wanted to stay with the hospital, you know, to me, if they're truly in love, he should still have a reason to live, you know? Yeah. So I don't know if I completely buy that John would be in that much despair. I'll get more into that later because I want to address something with that. But so despite, you know, why he's so depressed, I get the how he's so depressed, but the why, it seemed like he had just married her. And yes, they had been just apart, but they were just together. And yeah, she had other goals, but to me, I don't know. I would think that John, he would find some kind of way to make things work, or, you know, to for them to stay together than for him to just off himself like that. You know, so, and then of course there's the whole thing about, like, you know, he wants to kill himself, but he doesn't want to kill himself by walker. So, you know, I get it, but at the same time, it seems kind of pointless to be, you know, it's like he could get it done very quickly if he just let him at him, you know, and then just simply kill himself after the fact. So I don't know. How was Morgan expecting to take Marcus down from his horse? That I didn't understand. Morgan was already wounded. So how did he expect to be able to take him down? Instead, that went horribly wrong, and he ended up getting dragged quite a distance, you know?
If he'd had his axe,
yeah,
that would have worked. Or, you know, do the old Western, you know, grab the reins and jump on the back of the horse, or just from realistic standpoint, punch the horse.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, if you spook a horse like that with when they have someone on their back, usually they will not have someone on their back much longer.
Right.
But
spook the horse.
It was still, he stood there and it's like, oh no. And then he got roped.
Yeah.
Or he had an idea and he's like, oh, that's not going to work.
It just was not working. Speaking of not working, it is too easy to fix cars in the zombie apocalypse, at least at this point. Like, okay, so I'm going to go over to this truck that has been sitting there since he was a kid and be able to take parts out of it and make it, or get parts for it and make it run. Really?
Well, and that's why I would say that's the difference between Fear and the main show. In the main show, it's too hard to fix cars.
Well, on the main show, cars
were like, and I know you're going to throw something, but, you know, cars are like trying to jailbreak an iPhone. I mean, all the cars on the main show, you know, oh, he's got a flat tire. The car's now bricked. We can't use it.
Yeah.
And I exactly right that this truck's been sitting there since John was a kid, and assume that John is what? We'll be generous and say mid-40s, late 40s.
Sure.
So the car's been sitting there for, I don't know, 30 years with a hole in the hood in the rain. Yeah. I mean, now if they were in Arizona, I might have more leeway. But even then, anything rubber would have dried out, dry rotted and fallen off. The tires would be absolute crap.
Yep.
You know, the gas would be jello.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah, absolutely. It seemed pretty convenient that they can just get a distributor cap and some plug wires and et voila.
It runs. I mean, they were able to get gas from the other vehicle, you know, but still, it's just too simple. And especially that car, which was old before the apocalypse. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't care if it's sitting like with a tarp on it. It's still old. Yep. How long did it take John to dig that grave? It looked like he did it by himself, and it looked like it was at least a 3 feet down.
That was a righteous hole.
Yeah. So,
and the fact that when he was talking and throwing dirt in the hole, I was sitting there going, you know, Morgan, you know, Dakota, it'd be real decent of you if you went and got a shovel and helped him fill that hole in.
Yeah.
It was like a state job. There's one guy digging and two people watching.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a serious hole.
And
having had to dig a large hole by myself, John was remarkably unsweaty and not that dirty for having dug that big hole. But, yep. Oh, yeah.
The last point is, why is Morgan the only person that can end Ginny? I just...
Because?
Yeah, I mean, I can see other people that could do it. So, I mean, is he the type of person that can lead a group to... In Ginny, yeah, well, maybe, but
I've got to put on the voice for a second.
Okay,
Morgan Jones, it is your destiny. The Force has decreed that you are the one.
Yes. That's about it, too.
I mean, it's got to be. It's got to, you know, or, you know, we didn't see the clouds roll back and the beam of light shine down on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't pull the axe from the stone, thus declaring him king of all the Britons. But I got nothing, man. I just figured that's another one of those. Why Morgan? Because,
yeah, that's something that,
I'm going to say I could totally see Strand doing it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Because what would be a better scam for Strand to set himself up as the illustrious high potentate of the key crew?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
You know, one person I know could do it would be Madison.
Yeah, but I still say Madison's still at the ballpark eating turnips and old hot dogs.
Yeah, probably.
But, and if you want to talk about ending people, I would say that Daniel has the skill set for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does.
So, yeah. Why Morgan? Because, what is it? Because Chambliss and whoever says so.
Yeah, because the salary dictates it. All right, so let's move on to sad / aw sauce. I think it's mostly going to be sad this week.
Oh, yeah. Aww. Okay, starting off listener sad sauce is Dieta from Detroit. She says, June running to help John only to have to kill him because he turned. Sad face, sad face.
And I made another executive decision and put this one in the sad sauce. Because Brenda from the internet, she simply said, I'm actually crying, ... So that seemed pretty sad to me.
Yep. Glenn from Toronto says, John Dory reaching out and touching June's arm as a walker, as Garrett Dillahunt also alluded to on The Talking Dead. The question of how much of John's soul was left when looking and reaching out for June when he had so recently turned.
Oh, geez. I hadn't thought of it that way, but after I read that, I couldn't help but think of it that way.
Yep.
Renee from Atlanta's last of the listeners, she says, John Dory turning into a walker and the fact that June had to be the one to kill him. Crying face, crying face, crying face, and crying face. Man, that hurt. Anger face, and angry face. Like, really, Dakota? I have been saying this for a long time. You're batshit crazy. You and Ginny need to die a slow and horrible death. Yep, I think I agree with you on that. Okay, LT, what do you have?
Well, for our sad sauce, as Glenna said, that last scene with June and John. Even if you want to argue about how much of him was walkery, it was the fact that she was looking for John after she found out he had gone in the river. She sees him on the bank. She goes running to him. And to hear Jenna Elfman talk about shooting that scene and how hard it was to run through the water, the fact that she ran out there and she's like, you know, her John is there. And then when he looks up and he does the, and he had the milky white contacts in, just was absolutely gut wrenching.
Yeah. I had that too, about, you know, when we see his walker eyes, that this was awful.
I wasn't going to say it, but I got to say it now. It wasn't quite a full brine. It was about a half brine.
I had one, so
it got to me.
Yeah.
Watching John go over the railing of the bridge. I mean, it was bad enough to see him get shot.
Yeah.
But when you're thinking that she had, you know, when the, the gun wavered in her hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think, oh, she's going to put it down. He's going to be able to talk this out. Oh, no. Kapow. And then she walks over there and it's like, what was it? You're not going to mess this up, or I can't let you mess this up, or whatever she said.
Yeah.
And she goes, poot. And you see him go over the side. Yep. I'm like, I was sad before I was mad. Mm-hmm. Just the thought of John, she just killed John Dory.
Yep.
And I know you're going to talk about it more, but it tugged at my heartstrings and it hit a few relevant chords with John sitting there cleaning his pistol, watching the movie, but he's cleaning his pistol and he's taking a drink and he's by himself and he's doing, to me, there was that, you know, people asked about him cleaning his guns. And I think that was part of his ritual.
Yeah.
When they showed those scenes when he was Lawton, where he would, you know, clean his pistol, he would brush his teeth, he would do, you know, he had, John strikes me as the way they've written him is the kind of character that has, you know, you get up in the morning, you cook your breakfast, you fix your coffee, you know, you brush your teeth, you comb your hair, you get dressed, you put on your shoes, you go to work. You come home in the evening, you take your shoes off. You know, they're very, the normalcy of the ritual of daily life. And him sitting at the cabin by himself, drinking, cleaning his guns, loading it, and that first time that you see him put it under his chin, you're thinking, John has been in the cabin by himself for a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
That the way they shot it just made the isolation of that moment wear in my mind. I mean, it just really struck me. And I will let you go into your bit because I think it segues quite nicely.
Well, and this is a hard one to talk about.
Yep.
And I have kind of struggled with this, wondering what I should say and what I shouldn't say. And I feel like I should probably say most of what I my gut feeling was to say, because this last year has been hell for a lot of people. And when John says to Morgan, he says, I ain't right. I just ain't. It got to me. I cried. It reminded me of this past year and COVID. And I don't know how much detail I want to get into.
Well, you don't have to. I mean,
yeah, but I've had my own issues with mental health, and I've had my own issues with mental health over the past year.
Mm-hmm.
Lost friendships over it. Lost some people that I care for over it. And it's been a really rough year for me. And I've not ever gotten to the point that John did, but there have been some days when I just wished things would just be over. And, you know, I've been in therapy and, you know, had to see, you know, psychiatrist now for the last 11 months over, you know, stuff that came up during COVID. And, you know, it's been tough. And, you know, I thought if any of you out there have been suffering as well, trust me, don't suffer alone. And, you know, it's best that you go deal with those issues and don't let them, you know, fester into something.
Well, even from my perspective, just being an introvert by nature, it was a tough year that the only people you see in person, you know, was people I was kin to.
Yeah.
That just being able to go to the grocery store and see somebody else and you know, have a casual conversation with somebody you run into at the market over the price of cantaloupes.
Yeah.
Just any sort of human interaction. It was a very wearing time, especially like with work, when you're used to dealing, you know, the guy you don't necessarily like, or your friends from the office. It was a very isolated, difficult time. And
yeah, I think it's gotten better over mm-hmm. the months as we've gotten used to it. But like, I've recently, gotten my both vaccines. So, you know, I think you have to wait a little bit before it takes full effect. But, you know, now I feel more comfortable going out, and, I'm still going to wear a mask and all that stuff, but, mm-hmm. but I think I'm going to finally start going out. But my point being that there was something about this that really spoke to me. And as I said, this has been a tough year for me personally, probably my worst 12 months that I've ever had. And I've had some pretty bad 12-month periods. 2018 was pretty bad for me, but 2020 was, I'd say, the worst. So anyway. All right. Well, anyway, that's it for our sad sauce. So let's go into our feedback section and play Rick and Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
Okay. So our first bit of feedback, since we played Renee's feedback first, let's go and play Megan's feedback first for the feedback for this week's episode.
Hi, this is Megan Lehman with some feedback on the John Dory death episode of Fear. I'm not happy. I'm sure you're hearing from a lot of unhappy people today. So instead of eating my feelings, I'm going to try to just point out some things I thought were interesting about this episode. First of all, at the beginning of when John is watching a movie and he's trying to kill himself, but he keeps seeing walkers and killing them instead. The movie is Meet John Doe. It's a 1941 Frank Capra film, and it stars Gary Cooper and Barbara Stanwyck, and it's about a grassroots political campaign created unwittingly by a newspaper columnist involving a hired homeless man who's like basically assuming a fake identity as a sort of a political scam. I thought it was kind of interesting because the guy, I guess, he gets all these followers, and then he doubts himself and he's going to kill himself. And then at the end, she convinces him that his life is worth living and he can have a positive influence. And they kind of expose this corrupt politician and start over or whatever, from what I gathered from what I read online. So it sounds like an interesting movie. I've never heard of it before, but it was number 49 in the American Film Institute's 100 years of film ranking. So who knows? But it sounded like the guy was going to kill himself in the film and decided not to at the last minute and try to find a purpose. And so I guess that was the connection there. Obviously, the character's name was John as well. So the scene with Morgan, John, and Dakota trying to go across the bridge in the armored old Chevy truck, I thought that was just one of those stupid setups that would have been, you know, much easier to just go and clear them out by hand, reaching over the barricades and stuff like that, rather than trying to create that elaborate setup, which obviously failed. And when John was floundering on the hood of the truck, I thought he got bit, actually. I truly thought it was going to be a Carl moment where they revealed later that he had been bitten during that. I thought that it was kind of silly that Dakota claimed that her dad had taught her to drive when she was a girl, because this is like 10 years into the zombie apocalypse, and I thought she was supposed to be like 14. So either she's a lot older than I thought, or she was some kind of driving prodigy before she could reach the pedals. I thought when John got shot, that scene, the acting from Dakota was really, really good. And then when John fell in the water, the videography was really fantastic, with all of the colors swirling and the sunlight coming through the water column with the blood and everything. I thought that part was done extremely well. And then when he washes up on the shore and June realizes that he's a zombie and he slowly crawls to her and then he reaches for her hand, it was like they held hands one more time. That scene was so well done. The look on June's face when she held the knife up and started to plunge it just communicated everything. It was super, super well done. And I also liked how she, you know, expressed her distress and ran out, you know, basically told Jenny, like, screw you. And she took charge of the situation, you know, and ran out to get him. It's going to be a lot of, you know, ramifications going forward with the rest of this half season and longer. This death was a hard one. And I'm sad that he's gone because he was my favorite character. I think my favorite remaining character now is Strand. And we don't see him as much anymore. So I'm hoping that this back half continues to be as good as I thought the first half was of this season. But I'm going to have a hard time for a long time getting over the death of John Dory. Like the fish. RIP, John. Bye.
Well, thank you so much, Megan, for your voicemail. Second voicemail of this week. Thank you for looking up the Frank Capra movie, Meet John Doe. I did not realize that was a Frank Capra movie. And I
really should watch it. It's
been a long time. I may have seen it before, but...
It's kind of the Gary Cooper version of It's a Wonderful Life, except it's not Christmas.
Right.
Okay. It's a very Capra movie, and it's a good movie.
Mm. Totally agree on the futility of the Chevy. I think it would have been easier for them to do it by hand or, you know, by sound, like we were talking about. And I thought John got bit too on the hood of the pickup. Like, I watched the first episode this morning. Watched, you know, the first episode of the season, and you know, there was that one guy, Isaac, that, you know, he got bit before we even see him in the episode. And it was like a similar kind of thing. I had wondered if, you know, maybe he got bit, or, you know, like Carl got bit in season 8 of the main show, something like that, you know, or what's his name from the season 1, Jim? Yeah, Jim, one that got bit after the picnic.
Yeah.
How they held hands one more time, June and John. Yeah. I see that now. Definitely. So once you see that, you can't unsee it, but in a good way, I guess, a sad way. And, yes, on the knife, I don't remember specific. Oh, it was, June and how she, had to stab him. It was very emotional, you know, and how she did it. That's, yeah. And just one correction, it's not 10 years into the apocalypse on this show. It is on, you know, World Beyond. It is on the main show. Actually, from what we saw in Here's Negan, it's 12 years in. But on this show, I think it's only about 4 years in. So the, you know, it maybe a little bit more than that, but
I was going to say 6 maybe, but
it's certainly not 10. It's earlier in the timeline than it is on the other two shows. Yep. So, all right. So that's it for Megan's voicemail, unless you have anything else you wanted to add to that.
Nope. Just thank everybody preemptively for sending in voicemail.
Yep. And we have one final, and that's from Renee. Her third voicemail this week. I think that must be a record.
I think so.
Yep.
Hi, guys. This is Renee from Atlanta. We're calling about Fear the Walking Dead. And I said I'm just going to call in on Sunday. Just go ahead and call in. In case I get so busy that I don't get a chance to call in and do the review, by Tuesday or Wednesday. So whichever one of y'all want to use the voicemail, I'm going to go on Facebook, and since I'm back on Facebook, and do a review as well. But I give this 8 out of 10 because, I mean, this is everything that I expect out of The Walking Dead. It was really good. Of course, with John Dory, that was bad, especially with June having to kill him. And you guys know I have been saying this from the very beginning. Something is wrong with the little girl. The little girl has issues. She's worse than Virginia, I believe. I believe she's psycho. So when they get ready to take Virginia out, they need to take her out as well, because the little girl has issues. But she's an awesome actress. She played her part so well tonight. She just seemed really crazy. I mean, she played that part. She's an excellent actress. And she's going to really go far, because she really played her part well. Like I said, I mean, it was what I expected. We had zombies. You know, I like the zombies. I like the personal stuff, like getting to know each other and all of that, and things that happen in their past. But I like zombies. This is what The Walking Dead is about, zombies. So I love to see the zombies. And we had all of that. But I'm over everyone always talking about they don't want to shoot. They don't want to kill no more. They this, they that. They want to kill themselves. I mean, I'm sick of that. But John Dor is gone, so we don't have to worry about that. He's not going to be Morgan. Point two. And I'm going to name the episode, Morgan Has Another Best Friend. I cannot believe it. Why would he do my baby like that? You're supposed to be Rick's best friend. You could have said your second best friend, but not your best friend. Rick is your best friend. But, yeah, the show was really good. But, like I said, I'm going to go and online, I hope, if I remember, on Facebook. But, okay. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Well, thank you so much, Renee, for your third voicemail. And I just have to give you an extra thing for this because, like I said, I think that is a record. So, in addition to the Showcase Award, you also get one of these. So, anyway, is there anything that you wanted to say about that one?
I was just going to say, we can have two best friends, Renee. And I don't think Rick would mind. So
yeah, Morgan, I think you would. I got to find Morgan.
Of course, then again, I'm not going to say, well, Shane was Rick's best friend, but
yeah. Well, you just kind of did.
Okay.
Well, you can, the thing is, you know, best friends can change too. That's
true.
Another point. All right. So that's it for our voicemail. So now we're going to get into written feedback, and we have some extended written feedback. So let's get into it. First with Dieta.
I was going to say, obviously we complained too much on the episodes. We didn't get any that it came back.
Yeah.
So Dieta from Detroit says, I just hope they don't spare Dakota and make nice after what she did. She killed the ranger because she was mad. He told her sister she was sneaking out.
Yeah.
I can't wait for her and Jenny to get what they deserve. Morgan better not take her to the new spot he is building. Overall, it was a decent episode. I'm still upset they killed John off, as are we all.
Yes.
He was definitely one of my favorites. I guess they just have to make room for Madison's return. Winky face, grin, grin. And, okay.
Well, like I said, I think earlier is I think what it was is they realized that they needed to kill off a character, and Dillahunt went, you know, right here. So I think that's how it went down. And if it didn't go down that way, it went down where Dillahunt went to them and said, get me off the show. So I don't think it went that way. I think it was a mutual decision, but,
yeah.
But now that, and it sucks because I think that this season has been way better than season five was. And, you know, any complaints that we have, like in this episode, for example, that, you know, our biggest complaint is John's dead. You know, the other little things that we've got are just, you know, nitpicky things, you know, like the, you know, clearing the walkers off the bridge.
Yeah.
That's a nitpicky thing as far as I'm concerned. It's not like a major thing. So, you know, that's what I say. Like, compare this to the whole, you know, story arc of season five. And, you know, there's just no question. This has been better. So, you know, if I think you reap what you sow, which is something I said to my wife in a totally different context this week, if season five hadn't been so shitty, we probably wouldn't have lost John Dory. But, you know, but I think that he realized that the stories weren't very good. And like I said, I know for a fact he had people that were telling him on social media and even at cons saying, "We love your character. We just wish the show wouldn't suck so bad." You know, and after a while, that kind of wears on you. And he's like, "My God, why am I still on this show?" You know, and especially like, you know, his wife is, you know, one of the lead characters on Picard, you know, which I have kind of Picard hat, you know, and that show compared to this show, that show is way better than this show, in my opinion, although it's not my favorite Star Trek. It's, I think, my favorite or compared to these two shows, it, you know, so he's got some sibling or some siblings, some
spousal
rivalry. and you know, like, actors are a lot of times different than we are, you know, where we like to get settled into jobs. A lot of times, like, you know, like Nick, Frank Delane, he's like, "Well, I want to go do something else." And that happens a lot of times. And, you know, probably happened with Cliff Curtis as well. I don't know the story behind him leaving the show in season three, but, you know, stuff
like
that.
At least they're not telling him, "Well, your character sucks, but we love the show."
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. But anyway, let's move on. I tend to think that that's what happened, though. It was like Dillahunt, seeing how bad the show got, wasn't going to miss it. So I think from the sounds of it, he got along with everybody on the show, but just wasn't too happy with the story arc. So, and who can blame him? And I think that they wrote his character great, but the stories were just, especially last season, they were terrible, you know?
And I'll just say it again. Zombie movie with Dave Bautista.
Right. All right. Next, and this is a long one, and hopefully I won't lose my voice after this one. Glynis from Toronto is next, and actually the one after this is also long. So, but Glynis from Toronto says, "The Fear of the Walking Dead graphic intro had John Dory pointing the gun facing right to the approaching walkers on the bridge in direct contrast with The Walking Dead, Rick Grimes pointing the Colt Python facing left to the approaching walkers on the bridge." It did certainly look similar to that. Yeah,
very reminiscent.
It did. Doubly tragic losing John Dory, as I think he decided he wanted to live, and ironic that the door he wanted to shut the past walkers assisted in prolonging his life for a little while longer as he floated down the river on that same door. Also because of John's past, and she had the first past, P-A-S-S-E-D in quotes, and this past, P-A-S-T, he wanted to end it by committing suicide. Yes. Another more obvious contrast slash comparison was June floating down the river to John Dory's shack in Fear the Walking Dead Season 4, Episode 5, Laura, with now John Dory floating down the river and washing up at his shack. Yeah, that there was, there definitely was a callback to that. Yep. John Dory was my favorite character on Fear the Walking Dead, with his cowboy ways and such a kind-hearted hero, always wanting to do good and the right thing. I'll just stop you right there. 100% agree. He was also my favorite character. He would have handled Dakota the right way and guided her to be a better person, but she stepped over the line with killing John Dory in cold blood. Boy, did she ever.
Mm-hmm.
No leniency should be extended to Dakota, as in the case of Charlie. As Charlie killed Nick in revenge for Nick killing Ennis. But Dakota has now killed two people just so she could have her way. Yeah, exactly.
Excellent point.
Both John and Nick were shot in the chest. True. Mm-hmm. Dakota killing John Dory was also tragically pointless, as Morgan figured out very quickly that she was the one that had killed Cameron. So her secret was out anyway. Dakota is not rehabilitating material, in my opinion, as she didn't even consider not shooting John Dory after he promised he'd not tell anyone, when he'd illustrated to her that you don't have to always shoot someone, in not shooting the ranger in the store, as it wasn't justified at the time. Morgan needs to clear Dakota. I'm not buying it that Dakota patched up Morgan. She could have overheard Morgan and John talking about the note and the situation Morgan had been in. She'd say anything to save herself. Dakota is just a selfish, spoiled, psychotic brat that needs to be ended. Hmm. Do you buy that she wrote the note and patched up Morgan? Because I kind of did.
Yeah. Unless we find out to the contrary, I think it fits the pattern.
I think that you could be right, that it could possibly not be her, but I bought this option. Yeah. So,
and I will reserve the right to say that you were right and I was wrong if we find out otherwise.
Yeah. Next point, and I agree with you on this one, Dakota is pure evil. I could understand that maybe the gun went off by mistake in the heat of the moment, but pushing John Dory off the bridge, Dakota has the makings of a serial killer. Calling Carol to tell Dakota to look at the flowers. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and we talked about the similarities there. They're, you know, I think, like I said, I think Dakota's not insane, whereas Lizzie was.
Yeah.
But aside from that, they're very similar. June is showing she's not scared of Virginia, maybe partly due to her saving her life when she cut off her hand and partly due to her fear of losing John Dory. I would say 100% on both points. So June may want revenge now to both Virginia and Dakota. She will regret sparing Virginia's life, because if June had left Virginia to die, John Dory may have still been alive, so Dakota and Morgan would not have been running from the Rangers and Virginia still, so not met up with John Dory again in the first place. June may also regret sparing Virginia's life, as Virginia knew it was her sister, Dakota, that killed Cameron and covered it up, so again, John Dory would still be alive. You can see where Dakota gets her craziness from, with Virginia framing Janice as the killer of Cameron. Virginia can also join in the queue to look at the flowers. I wonder if it's going to come out that a lot of Virginia's motivations are in covering up the actions of
her sister.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's doing it just to maintain order.
Right. A lovely episode with the callbacks, interaction, and action, but so sad we've lost such a great character. Sad face with a tear. I know Garrett Dillahunt had asked to be written out of the show, but that still doesn't prevent the ugly crying going on. Yes, crying face, crying face, crying face. And one last comment to those self-opinionated idiots. I could use more choice words here to describe these clever individuals, but trying to restrain myself here, smirking face, that took it upon themselves to spoil this episode, as they felt the need to blurt it out on every form of social media they could find, and of course on non-Fear the Walking Dead sites and other unrelated social media sites. I did keep away from Fear the Walking Dead sites, but that wasn't good enough to avoid the spoiler, as it was spoiled on a Walking Dead reaction site, so as a result, it got spoiled anyway. Blame is also shared by AMC for streaming these episodes 1 week earlier on AMC Plus, which is not available outside the U.S. Evidently, it was also available on AMC Premiere, by the way. And releasing episodic pictures of John Dory with his white glazed over eyes. Oh, really? I didn't know about that. That's bad. This episode would have packed even a bigger punch, shock-wise, if I wasn't expecting John Dory's death around each corner and pixel frame. Just grrr. And a caveat now. Rick Grimes will never get to meet John Dory. They would have made such a great team in the upcoming TWD movies. My two favorite cowboys gunslinging together. How great would that have been? Yes. That would have been fantastic.
And I cannot argue one bit with that.
No. Yeah, the point about them releasing the show so early, I wondered that too. Like, it was a whole week, which,
yeah,
I mean, that's a long time to keep a secret out. So I'm sorry that you got spoiled. I knew something had happened. And you know, we kind of got a tip off, like from what Kyle read in the episode, like last week, that something big was going to happen this week. So I was expecting something. And as soon as they, you know, come in on it being John Dory at the start, I'm like, oh no, not John Dory. And,
that's why I assiduously avoided Twitter. And I normally avoid Facebook most times anyway, but I tried to stay off of anything that would have spoiled me since I knew the episode was out like a week early.
Well, in my case, you know, I've been really busy at work and, so that kind of worked to my advantage because I didn't really have time to, you know, spend a lot of time on the social medias. So, as a result, I didn't really get spoiled. I did watch it. Was it Friday? I think I watched it on Friday or late Thursday night. It was after we recorded the last episode. So, and we're recording this on Thursday. And last week we also did a late, recording on a Thursday, but, I watched it a few days ahead but not a week ahead.
Right.
So, yeah. But yeah, I think it's not like, you know, if you remember back in the day, like when say Dale was killed or when Lori and T-Dog were killed in that one episode, that came out of nowhere. Like no one was expecting that when it happened, you know, cause that was in the middle of the season and it happened, you know, like in an episode that you wouldn't have expected it to happen. And it was just like, holy cow.
And I would also argue it was a different climate back then. It seems like that now it is the cool hip thing to do to spoil plot wrinkles.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And there's a whole cottage industry built around spoiling episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it started around the time of season five, I would say, you know, when there was the whole thing with, you know, the Terminus stuff. People wanted to know what happened at Terminus, you know, and I think that's what got it started, and then it accelerated with Negan, and people wanted to know, like, you know, who did Negan kill, and you know, all that stuff. So it got even more so. But you know, there is a whole cottage industry around it, and it's usually stuff that I don't play with. You don't listen to. And I know some people that get all that stuff, you know, hear all of it ahead of time, and I don't know how they can even still watch the show because they get spoiled out of everything. But yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you, Glynis, for your feedback. Great as always. Let's move on to the next bit of feedback.
All right. Aaron from the internet says, had I not checked AMC's Instagram, which links to the Fear account, I would not know the show was even on tonight, which tells you all you need to know about their promotions and the chances for renewal outside of a merger of all the properties into one show. Okay, let's just get to the big part of the episode. John is dead. They killed another fan favorite, and for what? Yes, John cares she killed the Ranger, but who else in the group really would, given they're all murders too, for pretty much the same reason? Virginia already knows, so it's not like he would be revealing some big secret to her. It felt like some anticlimactic reason just to shoot him, which, yes, you can argue is the point of the episode and how death doesn't always mean something, as one point was argued. But still, I'd like some logic personally for it. Had Virginia not known it was her sister, then I could get shooting him. Or if she feared not being welcomed into the settlement because of it, I could get it. But again, they've all literally killed someone, so what's the point? Okay, she says, did Garrett just want out? Is that what really happened? Because how do you kill a favorite like John Dory when you already have questionable ratings?
Well, I was going to say something here, but we already really talked about it, yeah, so.
I think we've already clipped on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say they're making Dakota the new Charlie because she killed Nick, who some people liked. But they've done this plot, so I think they would kill Dakota this time to be unique instead of trying to save her. If anyone is redeemed, it will be Virginia now, having to work with Morgan for the next phase, aka the possible merger, assuming she doesn't kill herself after probably killing Dakota herself.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's an interesting take.
Sister killing sister.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see Dakota killing Virginia. I hadn't really thought of Virginia killing Dakota, but
maybe Virginia will do the look at the flowers.
Maybe.
Okay. Also, the floating downstream bit felt like salt in the wound for hardcore John fans because it made it seem like he had a shot and then having June kill him. Was there split up after the oil fields not enough for these writers? They literally had to have June kill him because he turned into a zombie? Which, I'm sorry, not really, but can we go back to calling bull on that and how John died after being shot up close as well and almost drowning? And the time frame is like within an hour or so at best. But Morgan Jones gets shot as a walking septic bag because of infection for months, and he's all perfectly fine now.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I watched the first episode of the season earlier, and mm-hmm. Yeah, he was definitely, you know, he was so infected that he was gangrenous, and mm-hmm. The walkers just avoided him, you know?
He's got Band-Aids on top of Band-Aids.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, she goes on and says, showrunner pet. It reminds me a lot of the Madison death and how the extra life vibe is just a needed hurt. Fans were already crying when she got shot. You didn't need to have June kill him also. Extra pain is not good pain, writers. Ugh. Look, I'm going to say it. Even though she did kill John, I appreciate the fact Dakota is still arguably in character, still doing it. She's, what, 15 years old, so saying the apocalypse has been going on for 5 years show-wise, that's some big formative years of her life, and who knows what she's seen before then. So saying it's just how things are, I can actually get. John doesn't think freedom from the compound is worth killing over, but that's what it is to Dakota. Cameron took her freedom route, So she killed him because it's how she's been raised to survive all these years. It's like Charlie again, and how shooting Nick out of retribution is how she was raised by the vultures. Fans don't like it, but it's understandable. So there's at least that. True, Dakota may also be a baby psychopath who is one that killed her parents, not Jenny, but either way, it's still in character, which is nice given how they've wrote some things in the past.
Yep.
I do have to ask, though, beyond just being the clear showrunner pet, why is Morgan the only one who can stop Virginia?
Yeah.
John literally could have killed her many times and Dakota would have been free. Daniel could kill her and he's already looking to die more times than not to be with his family. And sadly, Reuben is just a guest star now on the series. So why not get buddy buddy with him as he likes killer kids? See, Charlie? Dwight, I feel, could do it. Alicia's pretty sneaky. Heck, go find Madison and she'll do it if you just tell her she looked at Alicia wrong. You have options. So, yeah, I did groan at that line, I'll be honest. What I will say for Morgan in this episode is this. I appreciate him finally admitting his dick nature at times. I referenced the scene when he told John he could be mad all he wanted and hate him, but he wasn't going to let his friend kill himself. He was pushing his desires onto John and not respecting his wishes. So to hear him admit that he was surprisingly refreshing and actually made me say, go Morgan.
If wow. They wrote,
I know
that is rare for you, Aaron.
Oh yeah. If they wrote him more being honest about his issues and lack of respect and how he does push his choices on people, I could possibly tolerate him. But I know he'll be back to his I'm not wrong ways soon, so I'll just enjoy this little piece of scene for the rest of the season. Ha. I'm also calling foul on the truck getting stuck on the zombie. The weight of it plus three passengers would crush the zombie and slide on the blood. Okay, sure, maybe some, and okay, maybe the body is stuck in there for a bit as they continue, but to stop the truck on its tracks, I feel is a no. Hmm. An okay episode at best, but definitely not the one that screams we want to be renewed, and exactly because, again, killing John was as smart as killing Madison.
Well, that part I will agree on. It, you know, killing John was about as smart as killing Madison, and I only think that it happened because of...
Garrett wanted out.
You know, like... If they said we have to kill somebody, who would they kill? I mean, there's a number of characters that they could have killed that would have worked. I don't know. Who do you think they could have killed instead?
Well, and I don't know about the contractual obligations. They could have killed Grace.
Yeah.
That would make Morgan all, you know, cuckoo and Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
She mentioned it. Reuben Blades is just a guest star now, so they could kill Daniel.
Is he just a guest star? Because I think it still has him down as and Reuben Blades. Like
he's I don't
like,
know. I would just go in by what she had said. I cannot independently corroborate.
I would agree with him because he hasn't been there all that much, and you know. I don't think they would want to kill Strand. I don't think they would want to kill Alicia.
Nope.
They're definitely not going to kill Morgan. So, you know, they could have killed June. I think that would have like potentially given you the same kind of like effect because killing one of them versus, you know, the other.
Yeah. But the thing about killing June is in a unique position right now because Jenny owes her.
Yes.
And I think they're going to play on that. And June is still in town.
Yeah.
So
I would agree.
Yeah. We don't have a Tara or an Enid or a Henry. Somebody who's important, but not absolutely important with a plot hook. So.
Right. Yeah. I think they're could have been other people they could have killed. But John is I'm really sad to see him going. But what do you do?
I was going to say you could. Well, I don't know if they could kill Dwight. I don't know if the Sherry and the Mask Gang would go on a murderous rampage over Dwight getting killed. So I don't know. And that's okay. I almost called him Emilio Estevez. I just blanked on Dwight's real name.
Oh, Austin Emilio?
Yeah, there you go. But I think, I don't know if he's got anything else cooking, so.
I don't know of anything else.
So, I think as much as I hate to say it, John was probably the only one that was a real super viable death, so.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so we got one more bit of feedback, and that someone we've heard a lot from this week, Renee from Atlanta. She says, overall, it was a pretty good episode. I knew something was up because of all the chatter that was going on, so I wasn't too surprised. This episode was full of drama and zombies, exactly what I look for in TWD shows. I just want this mess to be over with, Ginny, and for them to start wrapping things up because I'm ready to see my boo, Rick Grimes. I totally agree with what Brian said last week. It's not the same without Rick. Crying face, crying face, crying face. I really miss him, and even though I'm going to watch until the end, it feels like something is missing, and that's Rick. I mean, I said it last week, so I totally agree.
Yeah.
I don't feel like something is missing from this show, but definitely on The Walking Dead, you know, I feel at this point like there are multiple things missing from that show, namely Rick, Carl, and Michonne, mm-hmm. you know, in that order, I would say. So it's sad to see those three gone. You know, two were, I guess, by their own decisions. And Carl, I just think that was stupid. So,
yep.
All right. So that's it for our feedback. It's other notes. What do you have?
Well, just sort of echo what Glennis had said. The title card should have been my clue. Whenever they had the lone John Dory on the bridge that looked just like the episode of Rick on the bridge, and we know what happened when Rick was on the bridge. So, obviously, being on bridges is a sign of foreboding in the Walking Dead universe.
Yeah.
So just seeing that shot on the title card, I should have immediately made the connection, but I was just going, oh, cool. It's another John Dory title card from Fear the Walking Dead. Because.
Yeah, I see that.
And for those of you who can't see, my Zoom background is the last John Dory title card from Cameron's murder episode.
Okay. Well, we already talked about this a little bit. I said, who's the real psychopath, Ginny or Dakota? When Dakota started crying there, I thought it was all an act. So I tend to think that Ginny may be cold and calculating, but I think Dakota's probably the real monster and that Ginny's been cleaning up all of Dakota's messes over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what else she's done? Chompers, we heard a few in this episode. Chompers, the past. I'd heard earlier in the season, I don't know if it was specifically mentioned, but Rotters and Walkers. So we always heard that, but Dakota called them Chompers. And of course,
add to our lexicon.
Yeah. Is this the first time we ever heard that Morgan was a mechanic, or like whether he was amateur or professional, but sounds like he had fixed a lot of cars over the years.
I don't know if they ever said what Morgan did.
I don't think they did.
Pre-ZA.
Yeah. That scene between Dakota and John where she said that's just how people are now. That should have been a sign of what was to come. Because, you know, if you recall, it was when they went over to that other cabin and, you know, she's like, well, you know, you shouldn't feel bad about this. This is just how people are now. It's like, mm-hmm. Yep. She's a psychopath there, you know?
Yep.
Or sociopath. I don't know. Someone who has a, you know, who's a therapist or, you know, psychiatrist, you can call in. Anyway.
And I was going to say, I only have a minor in psychology, and that was 30 some years ago. So,
yeah. I must have missed something. How did Morgan find the Scrabble pieces?
I think that when he met John when they went back to the cabin and they were talking, they were on the table. And when they went outside and started messing with the truck, Morgan had opportunity to get them off the table.
Okay.
When he was in the room. So you didn't see him specifically pick them up, but he had time between, when they were first in the cabin to when they were out at the pickup truck, when he sent John and Dakota off to find parts, he had plenty of time when he was alone. So he could have gone back into the house to find a wrench. We don't know.
For some reason, when Morgan started that one line, he said, "You're like that guy who walked halfway across the country to get away from people he cares about the most." I thought of, for some reason, Forrest Gump.
And at some point, I started running, and I kept running.
Yep.
And suddenly, all these people came and gave me things.
Yep. The way that Morgan says it wouldn't mean anything if it wasn't all of us that went to this place.
Right.
It reminds me of that one Next Generation episode, The Masterpiece Society, which I thought was kind of similar. And that is like, you know, if we take one person out of this, the whole like eco society or whatever will collapse.
Right.
It was a similar kind of thing. If you're not into Star Trek, it was like these people were predetermined for their careers. And, you know, if you took one of them out, it would, you know, collapse everything. And,
it's,
you know,
it's the Keystone theory. If you pull the Keystone, the arch will collapse.
Yeah. And to me, that's rubbish because it just doesn't make sense. The spot where John got shot looked close to where Rick got shot in the first Walking Dead episode. So like it was like a spot, like I think his right shoulder, or is it left shoulder? I don't know. I guess it was like around here.
Yeah. It was like a pectoral chest region.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the spot where he got shot was around the spot where Rick got shot in the episode.
And the bad thing is my brain went, well, no, they shot Walking Dead in Atlanta and they're shooting this in Texas.
Yeah. So, not what I meant.
Sorry.
Yeah. And as far as this episode, I mean, some of the cast we only saw briefly, but mm-hmm. in terms of the regulars, the ones that are considered regulars, I'm not counting like the rabbi or Wendell in this because they're not considered regulars. They're in guest starring. In terms of the main cast, I think the only two that weren't featured here were Sherry and Strand.
Yep.
I think everyone else was in this episode, at least, you know, they may not have had a line, but they were shown in the background somewhere. Yep. So,
and I was going to say, you said it in the light clicked on. That's a person they could have shot. They could have killed the rabbi.
Okay.
Nothing against the rabbi. I like the rabbi. I think I like that actor, but I'm just saying, I was trying to think of everybody that was at the Gulch after we were talking about it. And I was going, who am I missing? The rabbi.
Hmm.
So,
okay.
I think that's a lot of. I don't know if we're quite to a discovery level of commentary, but
no, that's a big long, we're close to 3 hours already.
I'm going
to
say it. Thanks guys. We haven't had a 3 hours Walking Dead episode in a long time.
Yeah. We're at the time that I'm here, we're close to 2 hours, 45 minutes, but it'll be less than that when you guys get it. Okay. So anyway, this is time for news, ratings, and info.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right. So ratings are, thankfully, up. Yay! Not a lot, but at least in the total number of viewers, it's up. It's exactly the same in the 18 to 49 rating with 0.26 in the 18 to 49 with 1.171 million viewers. And this is versus the season mid-season finale that aired in November, I think.
Yep.
So yeah, it also got a 0.26 then, but it got 1.085 million viewers. Then. So it's slightly up in the total number of viewers. And since I've been doing this for The Walking Dead, I also took a look at these because we were starting to notice that the demographic is sliding. So, the viewers that were, in their 40s are now turning into their 50s. So, whereas the ratings that were in, when these shows started and they were in their 50s, they weren't very high, but now they're disproportionately going up.
It's the graying of the demographic.
Yes. So in the 25 to 54, Fear of the Walking Dead got a 0.42, so it was higher. And if you look at 50 and over, it got a 0.68, which LT and me
are. Both of us are.
Yes. So we help bring that number up. In re-airing of the last episode, which was on before this, it got a 0.09 with 573,000 viewers. So Talking Dead at a later time. Actually, I don't think it was later compared to the last episode because World Beyond was on. But Talking Dead got a 0.03 with only 132,000 viewers. That has got to be a low.
Wow. Pants.
Yeah. And that is versus the last time it was on for Fear, which was a 0.04. in the 18 to 49 with 254,000 viewers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're curious, Gangs of London, which aired, in between the two, got a 0.06 in the 18 to 49 with 342,000 viewers. So it went sharply down from last week.
Pants.
Yes.
My thing was I actually watched a little more of it and
yeah.
The only reason that I even see any of it is because since they started this episode of Fear on an off time,
mm-hmm.
we had flipped back over to watch it because I think we missed the first part. And then the lovely and long suffering Mrs. LT was watching something else. And I was going, honey, it's time for Fear. Turn it back. So she turned it back early and I saw some of Gangs of London and it just didn't do anything for me.
Mm. Yeah. I saw about 5 minutes of it and wasn't, it's fine, but and it's not,
it may be, I may binge it later.
Yeah.
But, oh no, Brian, I'm looking at the parrots. I'm excitingly looking at the parrots. I'm waiting for you to talk about
the parrots. Oh, okay. I know what he's talking about. As far as the parrots are concerned, shockingly,
oh my God,
SpongeBob is not in the number one position.
And SpongeBob's little arrow is pointed down.
Yes.
This is the first time I have seen SpongeBob's little arrow pointed down on the Parrot page.
Yes. Number one this week was Attack on Titan, with 67.5 times the average demand of, or the demand of an average show.
Mm-hmm.
Number two was SpongeBob with 64.5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday Night Live, third with 57.1. So I think that was up one. My Hero Academia, fourth at 55.4. You have to go down to The Walking Dead at number eight. So it was up one notch from last week at 40.1 times the demand of an average show. But in total, like, amount, last week it was at number nine, but it got 40.5 times the average demand. Of course, maybe the demand was, total demand was up or something. I don't know. As far as this week's Talking Dead, then it's worth saying that Talking Dead won't be back on until the season finale in June. So, I mean, that sucks. I mean, the only place to get information on the episodes might be articles and AMC Plus or Premiere.
And I like the in memoriams and the talking and the seeing them, but
yeah,
so there's not going to be any Talking Dead.
No. At least that's what they said. They said it would not be on at all, like, so it wasn't going to be a question of it being on Plus and not being on, you know. Yeah. But then again, we may find that it is on Plus or slash or Premiere and they just didn't say it. I don't know. I believe I don't have AMC Plus anymore. I had, just so you know, fear only listeners, I had gotten last week the AMC Plus through Roku, and I did not keep it because I found that there were issues with the streaming, so I was going to try it through a different provider. Looks like I still have it for the moment anyway, because I think I cut it off today,
right?
Or, you know, it should be right. Cut off as of the 15th,
right?
So just looking at Talking Dead here, hold on a second, see if I can find it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think they had episodes for Fear.
No. Yeah, it's not on, so. And it looks like, yeah, I still have it for the moment, but it'll go away soon. Anyway, so right now I have AMC Plus through my Roku, but I'm going to probably try it through Amazon next. So we'll see. Anyway, for Talking Dead this week, the guests were Garrett Dillahunt, of course, Jenna Elfman, Lenny James, and Zoe Colletti. So the four principal, although Jenna wasn't in it too much, she, of course, played an important role at the end, but the three that were in it the most were on it. One thing I didn't realize from that was mentioned on Talking Dead, Zoe is the sister of Ian Colletti, who played Arseface on Preacher. And if you watched any of Preacher, you would remember Arseface.
Or if you read the comic book.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yep.
And if you need any, you don't understand that, his face looked like, well, anyway, I don't want to explain that. But,
No, Brian, don't do it. We don't have an explicit tag this week.
No. But most of the information that I saw this week was centered around Garrett leaving. And mm-hmm. So there were interviews, and, you know, both with him and with the showrunners about it. I haven't seen anything about the submarine story yet. So I've been on the lookout for it, but I haven't seen anything about it.
They promised us a webisode miniseries on the submarine, and I want my submarine show.
Yeah. So we'll keep looking for it, and when we find it, we'll let you guys know. But besides that, I think that's it for this week. We want to wrap things up. So why don't you tell people how to contact us and send feedback?
Okay. We want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter. That's at WalkingDeadTTM. Also on Instagram at the same handle. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/WalkingDeadTTM. You can email us at WalkingDead@TalkThroughMedia.com. You can use our feedback form on the webpage at TalkThroughMedia.com/feedback. If you want to leave voicemail, you can call us at 216-232-6146. All of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. Remember that the videos go first to YouTube before they hit the regular podcast routes. So if you want to be the very first to hear us when we come out, make sure you subscribe to YouTube. We'd love it if you like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. The best way to support us is through our Patreon. That's at www.patreon.com/thewalkingdeadtalkthrough. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Renee Murray, and Lawrence Todd.
That guy right there.
That guy. You can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. While you're there, be sure to give us a rating or review. You can also leave us a review at podchaser.com. There you can rate individual episodes or the whole podcast. Remember to share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them and tell a friend. Word of mouth is still the best way to get us new listeners.
And as far as other things you can hear us on, the Star Trek Discovery podcast will be coming out. I don't know when we're going to do it. Hopefully before the end of the month, we'll do a Patreon episode, and then eventually that'll come out on the main feed.
And once we have new Star Trek content, we'll have new Star Trek podcasts.
Yeah. It won't be this weekend. So, cause it's been, I'm still trying to catch up from things. So, but our Patreon for that is patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. So hopefully we will have an episode in the next 2 weeks.
But speaking of Star Trek content on the network, the Rebinge DS9 is going strong, and they are putting out episodes regularly. So if you're a Star Trek fan and you're listening to this, you know, please give them a try and give them a listen. Kim and James are doing that podcast, and I'm sure they'd appreciate you giving them a listen. And they're also another one of the fine podcasts here at Talk Through Media.
Our next episode will be covering season 6, episode 9 of Fear the Walking Dead, titled Things Left to Do. It is written by Nick Bernardone and directed by Michael E. Satrazimus for the second episode in a row. The description that I picked up off of Google.com is a standoff occurs between Virginia and her Rangers and Morgan's group. Ginny has made a lot of enemies, and it's finally catching up to her. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.